My Casa Giudecca is a golden ratio to one another, and it's a 3D form. So basically the theory is that the whole universe is this geodesic sphere that is pulsing. So, you know, the more I learned about that side of the geodesic, like how it's all throughout nature, inside of our bodies, around the Earth, and potentially in the universe itself, it's like, you know, as within, so without. Eventually, I believe there will be a lot of geodesic homes on Earth. And this new material science, so it's like all ceramic composites, and the intention is to build homes that have a design life of 500 years, and the raw ingredients can come from wastewater treatment plants and from desalination operations as like waste streams. So now we've put together a program with Zappos and City Repair to transcend homelessness.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands which are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we have with us Morgan Biershank, co-founder and CEO of GeoShip, Regenerative Architecture. Welcome, Morgan.
Hi, thank you.
Your company creates what is dear to most of us and what we all aspire for, home ownership. What are the home ownership rates in the US?
Well, you know, the best way to look at the affordability of housing, we believe, is really price to income ratio. So if you go back to the 1960s in the US, price to income ratio of a new home was about 2.5x. So if you're making $50,000 a year, the average price of a new home was $125,000. Today, you know, it's more like 5x to 8x or 9x in some places. So our goal is really by introducing mass production technologies and new material sciences that we can reduce the price-to-income ratio of single-family housing back down to 2.5x median income.
So let's first start with regenerative architecture. What is regenerative architecture?
A lot of different groups have different definitions. Usually it's applied in an ecological sense in terms of ecological regeneration. So how does the architecture contribute to the restoration of ecosystems? So basically reconnecting ecosystems. We actually look at regeneration in three different areas. It's kind of a 3X regeneration. And we're looking at it ecologically, biologically, and socially. How do we regenerate, which is basically to, you know, reconnect systems and undo harm that was done. It's a restoration process on a biological, social, and ecological level.
So you go further than sustainable architecture, which are LEED certified structures with bike racks, solar panels, you know, high efficiency insulation and appliances. You go much further than that.
Yeah, much further on just the ecological level, and then much further on, you know, applying regeneration to biology and sociology.
The structure of your home is very different. They are the geodesic domes. A lot of traditional structures, ancient structures, were built on the same model. Like, say, we take a teepee or an igloo, or they all had curves. When did we transition to this more box-like, block, angular shape homes?
Yeah, well, I think the transition happened, you know, at different times on different continents. But, you know, for instance, here in North America, Native Americans here always basically believed that everything in the universe is trying to be round. So they wanted to build their homes in the round and their villages in the round, because essentially that's, you know, what everything in the universe is moving towards. The fact that everything is rectilinear today is really, you know, at one level it's the materials that have been used, at another level it's just a certain level of understanding when it comes to a structure. Buckminster Fuller would often say that a box is not actually a structure until you triangulate it. It's flimsy, it doesn't hold itself, so it's not a true structure. And in a rectilinear structure, you have load-bearing walls, and with a geodesic and other more advanced geometric forms, the structure, just the skin of the structure, is the where the strength comes from. You don't need cross beam and whatnot inside, or triangulation in the walls to give it the structure. You know, it's not flimsy. So the other side of kind of wires everything rectilinear, well, the whole kind of a Roman grid system, where it really started in Rome, where they would occupy territories, and the first thing they would do is kind of drop down these streets with intersections and, you know, a Roman grid system. And that has spilled over into this whole world that we now see around us. It started with people having a planner lays out a map, and they start dropping a grid on it and building from there. Whereas that's not really in harmony with the nature. So if we look at like how the streams flow and how the mountains form, how can we build village layouts that are just more, you know, in harmony with the curves and flows of the natural environment?
Your business model seems to have a philosophical twist to it. For instance, one of the things on your website, a Rumi poem, jumped out at me. I don't know if it was deliberate or just a coincidence. And the Rumi, the ancient Persian poet, said, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there." And you have sort of the same philosophy for your ideas. Beyond the ideas of right angle and hard lines, there is a bioceramic dome. We'll meet you there. What is a bioceramic dome?
The geodesic form was originally defined by Plato, you know, 2,500 years ago, and he called it Gaia, which he essentially, all of 5 of the Platonic solids can nest inside of this geodesic sphere so that their points touch its points. So he called it the cosmic receptacle, Gaia. It's essentially the ley lines that encircled the Earth, which are like rivers of magnetism, form a geodesic grid around the Earth. It's a really fundamental form in nature because it's the most efficient way to enclose space. So even like the American Institute of Architects have that the geodesic dome is the lightest, strongest, most efficient means of enclosing space known to man. And we see it in the capsids of the protective protein shells that surround certain microorganisms, viruses specifically, and others, that they nature builds this kind of geodesic around it. And there's even a beautiful theory that was published in Nature magazine 15 years ago that says that the universe itself is a geodesic. So it's actually one of the things Buckminster Fuller would do is he would, you know, build an icosahedron out of basically sticks and squeeze it together just a little bit, like put it between his two hands and squeeze it together, and it becomes a dodecahedron. Icosa-dodeca, that it's basically the only 3D golden ratio fractal. So those icosa-dodeca is a golden ratio to one another, and it's a 3D form. So basically the theory is that the whole universe is this geodesic sphere that is pulsing. So, you know, the more I learned about that side of the geodesic, like how it's all throughout nature, inside of our bodies, around the Earth, and potentially in the universe itself, it's like, you know, as within, so without. Eventually, I believe there will be a lot of geodesic homes on Earth. And this new material science, you know, Buckminster Fuller said in the kind of 70s and 80s that, you know, the geodesic domes they were building then looked like wooden spaceships, kind of like the right turn down the wrong road. So, you know, that the material, he basically predicted that it would be 50 to 100 years until the material science arrived for us to really build geodesic domes in the way that he believed they would eventually come, you know, fill our planet in a sense. Like if you zoom forward, say 100 years or 200 years or maybe 20 or 50 years, there's more geodesic domes around than there are today, because the new material science, which is essentially, it's a chemically bonded ceramic. There was a professor named Rustam Roy. He was the head of the biggest material science lab in the U.S. at Penn State, and is really a legendary material scientist. He passed in 2014, I believe. He's a crystal chemist, so he actually invented like cubic zirconia. And for the last 15 years of his life, he was focused on defining a new science of whole person healing. So he was looking at like, how does a Qigong master focus his attention and change the molecular structure of water in a way that is measurable? So he was actually doing a lot of beautiful science on kind of the structure of water. And during that time, he discovered a new family of materials. He like defined this chemically bonded ceramics as like a new material family. And that his discovering that this new family of materials basically triggered a 12-year art taxpayer-funded R&D project at Argonne National Labs, which is, they were looking for a new material science that could solidify highly toxic nuclear waste for permanent long-term storage. So these ceramic materials are, they call them chemically bonded ceramics, because essentially, if you think of epoxies, cements, and ceramics as like three material families, this new chemically bonded ceramic family fits right in the middle of those three, whereas it has a lot of the properties of an epoxy in that it forms molecular bonds with metal and with wood and with itself. And it has a lot of the properties of a ceramic in that it's highly crystalline and covalent and ionically bonded. But it has a lot of the properties of a cement too, in that it's basically a water-activated powder that all happens at room temperature. So there's no high heat required like with traditional ceramics. So that new combination of properties basically makes it so that we are setting up a factory now to injection mold these ceramics into frames and panels that can be built into geodesic structures that, you know, a set of domes that connect to one another.
There are structures which are geodisc domes, some designed by Buckminster Fuller, and also some other companies which are doing it as temporary structures. And yours is primarily different because it's for a more permanent long-term structure and the materials that you use.
Yeah, well, so just to clarify, the geodesic is, like I said, originally defined by Plato 2,500 years ago as like a geometry that exists, but it was very hard to build. So what Buckminster Fuller did was invent a synergetic math. It's a whole new kind of math that he used to be able to build geodesic domes. And so he patented the first geodesic dome structures in like the 1950s. And, you know, there are quite a few companies out there that are building geodesics that are more like event structures. I mean, they're really popular at, say, Burning Man and different music festivals, and also as like little backyard Airbnb kind of structures. But those systems are usually a metal frame and some kind of canvas or skin is pulled over it. So we're building structures that are all ceramic. So the frame and the skin on the outside and the skin on the inside is all ceramic, and the insulation is also a cellular ceramic. So it's literally all ceramic composites, and the intention is to build homes that have a design life of 500 years and are fireproof and earthquake and hurricane resistant and can't grow mold and can't rot and can easily be repaired and resurfaced with the same ceramic materials. And then the challenge is also all of the really building a raw materials industry around those ceramics, which is a beautiful potential because essentially the raw ingredients can come from wastewater treatment plants and from desalination operations as like waste streams. And then there's a lot of aggregates that can be added to the ceramic that really make it a really versatile regenerative raw material.
You're really knowledgeable about this, the engineering, the science, the math behind the whole system of building these domes. Do you have a degree in engineering, or it's self-taught, or just something that you were really passionate about?
I do have a degree in engineering. I worked at Intel Corporation right out of university for a few years, but then when I was 24, I essentially left my corporate job and bought a one-way ticket to Asia and started traveling with a backpack for about 2 years. Basically, the last 15 plus years have been travel, meditation, reading, a lot of information activism. I was working on different projects in Iceland, like new forms of currency and democracy. And then for the last 6 years, I've been really deep in geodesic domes and bioceramic materials and the cooperative structures that we need to be able to to really bring this technology into the world in a way that can do maximum good.
Most homes, they need a foundation, they need structures which will hold it up. And especially in the Northern Hemisphere, you need it to go below the frost line. But for the geodesic dome, you don't need any of those, right? It can sit on top of the land.
Yeah, it can sit on top of the land because the dome is essentially like a cup or a bowl. You know, imagine you put a bowl on top of a cutting board and shake the cutting board. That's like an earthquake happening. It's like the dome can pick it up and move it, but stays together as a structure versus a rectilinear home that would break.
How are they fastened to the ground?
Yeah, so it really depends on what kind of ground it is. But in a lot of the same ways that homes are today, they could be, you know, you could pour a slab foundation and build the dome on a slab. You could build a platform and build the dome on a platform. But the most common way that we're really designing them for is we have a set of foundation blocks that basically you make a rubble trench foundation, which was really popularized by Frank Lloyd Wright. And you set these base blocks around the foundation, and the whole dome system is essentially a bunch of struts and hubs and panels that fit together like a piece of IKEA furniture or something to build the dome up. And all of it is bonded together with the ceramic, which acts like a glue. So that's one thing that's really unique about the building system. Because of this material science, we can make the frames and the panels and the mortar between them all the same material. So it's essentially becomes a monolithic structure when it's assembled on site, yet it's precast in or injection molded in parts.
How long would, say, 1,500 square foot home take to be assembled?
Once the, you know, all the permitting and whatnot is done and there's a foundation in place, or at least like a flat, say there's just a flat spot and we do the rubble trench and traditional foundation the way we're talking about, it would be, you know, 3 days, go together very quickly.
Wow. These are with the windows put in. I'm assuming you don't need to paint these panels.
No, you don't need to paint. You can paint, but you don't need to. We can, one of the unique things in a precast operation like we're building is that there's a lot of different colors and textures that can be molded into the ceramics. So there's just a lot of variation. And a 1,500 square foot dome, that's about 250 triangular panels. So imagine you're half, or they're usually about a 55 or 60% of a sphere. So it's a little more than a half sphere. But if you're standing in there and you have 200 triangles around you, any of those can be windows or skylights. So there's just a lot of basically variation and geometry that comes out when you can have such flexibility in the window configurations.
So what about the electrical lines, outlets, your appliances?
Yeah, that is essentially part of the multi-stakeholder cooperative model that we're developing, is all the mechanical systems, the cabinets, the furniture, and everything can be part of a cottage industry. So theoretically, all that would come with the ceramic dome. In terms of like running plumbing and electrical, it works very similar to the way it's done today, in that, you know, the first thing that you build is the frame, then you put the exterior skin on, and then you can run all your electrical and plumbing inside the walls, and then put the interior skin on and fill it as with a cavity fill insulation.
And the insulation is also ceramic.
Yeah, we're designing it so that a lot of different insulations can be used, from cellulose, wool, mats, or denim, or the one that we prefer is a cellular ceramic. It's the same material, just embedded with air. So it's a really lightweight, about 5 pounds per cubic foot, just very light inside the wall cavity.
Your structures seem so fascinating. It almost reminds me of something which is futuristic, something out of science fiction. It has so many very sustainable, well-thought-out features.
It also has a lot of commonality with the ancient structures and, you know, nature's technology. So it's kind of a hybrid in a sense. And there's also a lot of unique properties of the material science, like electromagnetically. You know, I mentioned that was originally developed by the nuclear industry to solidify highly radiated toxic waste. Well, there are really unique radiation shielding properties of the ceramic. It is essentially a high dielectric and paramagnetic. So what that means is, like a capacitor in our electronic devices, it can actually generate an internal charge field. So if you look